For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, everybody. Welcome into the Pick Six podcast. It's Evan Bland along with Sam McEwen and Jimmy Watkins. This is a Zoom edition on a hot and steamy midweek day in May. Lots going on. It's not technically college football season, but when is it not? I mean, there's so many things to get to. From Nebraska's perspective, it's a huge recruiting stretch going on. And in the sport at large, there are major seismic changes occurring that we're going to get to. And we'll touch on some Nebraska basketball and Nebraska baseball too before the pod is out. But here we are back on Zoom. It's been, at least for me, it's been a couple of weeks. I know you guys chatted last week, but you keeping up with everything? It feels like every day there's like something else just massively occurring in college sports as we know it.
It's a lot. It's a lot to keep up with. I would like to open the podcast by saying some people say that Sam McEwen is the czar of Nebraska media. Mm-hmm. I would say dig into his past, talk to people he's worked with, and see what's really going on.
Nobody says the first thing, Jimmy. Nobody says that.
Well, and this is coming from Jimbo Watkins himself too.
It's a good point. I didn't even make that connection.
Yeah, dig into my thanks. Thanks for that. my sordid past. Yeah, I'm the czar. I'm no czar.
Maybe a guru.
I'm not even an oligarch of Nebraska media.
I'd put you as a guru. You have guru status.
Okay, I'm not in the garchy though. Definitely not a gark of any kind, whether it's a, you know, oligarch.
It's not up to you to decide. It's what people say. It's what people say. It's not what you think.
Fair enough. I've always wanted to spend one day in the gark, you know, just, I don't know. So maybe one day. I think I'm pretty sure that this is many years ago, but there was a former reporter at the World Herald that went down and interviewed Maurice Washington down in Texas. And I think Maurice was staying at someone who had a house the size of him. If you go back and look at the photos of that, it's like there was like an indoor like swing or something. So I think that might have been our only swing by an oligarch. I don't know. Anyway, how's everybody? It's lots going on. Some of what's going on is sounds bigger than it's going to be. Some of it hasn't happened yet and may just be a trial balloon from the NCAA. We'll see. And some of it may not happen at all, including like the end of divisions in the Big Ten. I think we'll know maybe something soon, but we don't know. But that'll actually happen. I think there's still a discussion in route.
Well, maybe we should start with some of those big issues, and then we'll get down to more of the Husker-related stuff, including a big stretch of recruiting. So the NCAA Division I Council this week paved the way for two pretty major developments in how college football programs will run. The first being that they, for at least 2 years, have eliminated that 25-man class limit. So you can, in theory, sign as many guys as you want,
right,
to any given class. What I thought was interesting about how they still tried to curb oversigning was that they said you cannot at any time go beyond the 85-man scholarship limit. Whereas previously it was you had to be down to 85 by the time you got to fall camp. Now you can't go above it at any point. I guess what were your guys' impressions of that? This new rule that now will be in place for the next 2 years, and how do you think it will impact, you know, Nebraska relative to the rest of the field?
Go for it, Jimmy.
On the scholarship front, I would hope that coaches wield that freedom responsibly, because if left unchecked, that could become a dangerous situation for incumbent players. Potential is always more enticing than the finished product. And so I could certainly envision a scenario where a kid comes on with hot interest at the last second and a coach kind of nudges, let's say, an incumbent player out the door as a result. So I hope that that's not something that becomes a trend, but that's a concern of mine. In terms of the division thing, I don't think that's I don't have a ton interesting to say about that. I think it's good to have the two, however conferences want to define the two best teams in their conference. I think it's good to have those teams play for the conference championship in lieu of, particularly in the Big Ten, some of the beatdowns we've seen in conference championship games in recent years. Michigan, Iowa last year is a good example. The Big Ten's power, as we all know, is stacked on the eastern side of the conference. And so those teams should be the ones duking it out for the conference crown every year. As Sam said, I don't know if that's actually going to come to fruition, but I kind of hope it does. I think it would make the sport a little bit more interesting. I think it would make conference championship weekend more fun.
Okay, so Evan, you mentioned that you can't go over 85 at any time. Where was that at? I didn't see that.
I saw that on Football Scoop this afternoon.
Okay. I mean, that's kind of notable in the sense.
That's a murky thing, though, too, isn't it? Like, Nebraska is technically over 85 scholarships right now, or are they, right? They could have just not made it known that there's some guy who has a medical injury or a medical exception or something like that.
It's kind of a tricky situation. Usually teams manage their one-year scholarships in a way that guys are on, guys are off. There's actually rarely 85 on at all times. The scholarship distribution list that we maintain and that other websites maintain is just a kind of, clearinghouse number. But people would be surprised. When you go through the NCAA annual report, a lot of times it'll say the number of scholarships used was 82.85 or 83.85. There will probably be times when it looks confusing to us, but is actually the number. Moving on from that. So the inevitable thing that happens anytime that you deregulate a market, and this is a deregulation, is people are like, well, okay, naturally people are just going to, try to exploit it, try to sign as many players as possible. A couple of things had occurred based on the COVID allowances or whatever you want to call it, that actually complicated offering scholarships and almost necessitated a change. The NCAA put in a temporary change last year when they allowed the signing of 32 athletes up to a certain number. And now they've just taken the cap off. And part of the challenge that had arisen is over the next 2 years, you're going to see some teams clear a lot of players off their board, off their scholarship board, because they got an extra COVID year. Some teams were senior laden, some teams aren't. Nebraska is particularly old in the what you would call the sophomore eligibility. They've got 26 scholarship players there. And naturally, of course, you lose a bunch of other players who don't exhaust their eligibility and transfer. And so there was a necessity, especially after the COVID allowance, and in combination with not being able to allow any scholarships over 85, to create a scenario where they were able to replenish their roster. There were teams that were literally not able to get to 85 scholarships, even if they offered 32 last year. And so I think this is designed on some level to, reorient what's going on and trying to help teams get whole. And hopefully it may only be a 2-year deal. It may not be a lasting situation. And so I think it's probably a way for teams to get back to whole. Teams that were down at 50 scholarships and couldn't find a way to get back to 85. I would be hard pressed to see Nebraska sign 35 guys. But what this does do is it does give them some flexibility to sign a few more high school football players than they might have otherwise signed, just because they'll have the latitude to do so. Nebraska is actually pretty close to the 32 limit. How many guys they sign in the high school class, Evan? 15. I think that was it.
Yeah, really, that's
regular,
right.
Regular recruiting class, and if they get Marcus Washington this weekend, they'll be up to like 15. I mean, they'll be up to 15 there too. So they're getting close to, hitting the limit. They couldn't add 9 more transfers if they wanted to. So I think it'll be, I don't anticipate it being as big of a deal as possible. What it will help, incidentally, are new coaches. So coaches that are hired in the next 2 cycles will be able to completely turn over their roster and sign 35, 40 guys if they want to, especially if some of those players leave. And so that's a positive thing. And I think that's good for new coaches who are faced with the daunting task of trying to replenish and change their roster.
Hmm. I wonder if it will be, though, because we've talked about that before, Sam, about how, new coaches come in and there's this temptation to grab and to reload it right away, when you really it's history has shown waiting a year or two is more beneficial to doing that. So you wonder, with those safeguards removed, if some people will go a little too overboard. I thought that, the one-for-one solution made more sense, and maybe that is more of a long-term sort of system to put in place, where now that once teams do sort of get reset with their rosters, it's just one of those deals where, hey, you lose somebody to the transfer portal, you can sign or bring through the portal an additional player. I mean, that seems to make sense to me. From Nebraska's perspective, I mean, they've been right around 85 pretty much since the pandemic. I mean, when they've been hit with attrition, they've gone to the portal, as we've seen this year. A little bit, they did the same thing a little bit last year. So it feels like this is, not something that benefits Nebraska per se, but, again, maybe they are sort of incentivized to recruit a few more at the high school level than they would have before.
Yeah, that's possible. I mean, I think that's, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of different ways that you can sort of attack how you want to build a program. I do think there's some value to being patient. The challenge that they have too, though, is with the extra COVID years and the 4-game rule and all this stuff, they've actually really complicated scholarship management to this point. You have multiple players in Nebraska's program who have played 3 seasons of football and have 3 seasons of football left. Ramir Johnson, Nick Henrich, some others. And it's just, they've done too much. They've tried to make it things so accommodating that they've created just these sort of very hard to manage rosters and construct them. And so we'll see if they extend it beyond 2 years. What do you think of the divisions, Evan? What do you think of ending those?
Yeah, it's an interest. I mean, the Division I Council paved the way for that with their ruling. We saw the Pac-12 immediately did away with theirs and said, hey, as soon as this year, they're going to top 2 teams by winning percentage. I think in general, it's a good idea because you want the best possible conference championship weekend. I think this rule, should individual conferences decide to go that route, will aid in that. I think you're going to see a lot better games, but I wonder if it eliminates too many teams too early. Like, even in the Big Ten situation, when you think about how stacked the East has been relative to the West, if you're in the West and you're out of league contention by mid-October because Penn State and Ohio State and Michigan are running away with it, like, Where's the excitement there? Like, it feels like removing that carrot from more teams and making it so that they don't have a path to the championship game isn't necessarily a great thing for individual markets and for some of those mid-level teams in the league. So I feel like Nebraska falls into that group where the carrot's always been, well, win the West, which is doable, and then take your chance in 60 minutes against whoever you're going to be an underdog against. Now that becomes a lot more difficult, because now you're talking about not just beating somebody in one game, but outpacing two East powers throughout the course of a season. So I think in general, it's a good thing for Nebraska. I think it's going to make it a more difficult assignment to win the league.
Heading into the fourth quarter of the Nebraska-Iowa game, Minnesota had to love its position, because Minnesota was in a spot where they could have gone to the Big Ten championship for the first time. Then Iowa made a comeback and beat Nebraska, and then it was Wisconsin and Minnesota. If Wisconsin beat Minnesota, then Wisconsin goes. If Minnesota beats Wisconsin, then Iowa went. And that was a pretty fun little four team thing there, where Nebraska had a chance to play spoiler, and then Minnesota played spoiler, and that was all pretty exciting stuff for this side of the league. On the flip side of the league, you know, you look at the other side. You know, it basically came down to Michigan, Ohio State. In 2018 and 2021, Michigan, Ohio State would have played for the Big Ten championship 1 week after they played each other. And the reason for that in 2018 is I think Michigan had the tiebreaker over the team that Ohio State did play, which I believe was Northwestern, because Michigan beat Northwestern 20-17. In 2021, it's just the way it was. You know, obviously, Michigan and Ohio State could have played each other, and neither team had a loss in the Big Ten, I don't believe. And so, well, they did. Actually, Michigan had a loss to Michigan State. Ohio State didn't have a loss, and Michigan State had two losses. And so they were already eliminated, and the other side was sort of a mess, and so they would have played again. The idea that Ohio State and Michigan would play 2 weeks in a row diminishes the first game. I mean, it makes the first game almost like, you know, sort of a, I don't know what you want to call it exactly, a rehearsal. And obviously the teams wouldn't play it that way, but it would complicate the issue quite a bit. I'm not exactly sure what is, so I understand why they want to eliminate divisions, because the East beats the West every year. I'm not sure that there's a real discomfort with the East doing that when the East is primarily represented by Ohio State and Michigan. I just don't think there's really a problem with that. I don't think they have any, you know, frustrations or concerns. You go back to the first two Big Ten championship games before they flipped it, or I guess the first three, and it was Michigan State, Wisconsin, Nebraska, Wisconsin, and then Michigan State against, I believe, Iowa, right? Or I can't remember exactly who it was. Michigan State against somebody.
Right.
Ohio State. Michigan State against Ohio State. Well, that was less than ideal. That's not what anybody wanted. Those three games didn't move the needle. Since then, it's been Ohio State in every single game except two, and the other two teams were Penn State and Michigan. I don't think there's that big of a problem with the Big Ten championship game, other than the fact that the West never wins it. But I'm not sure that's a problem for Ohio State and Michigan. And let's be honest, those two schools kind of run the league. I think it's probably going to come down to whether Ohio State and Michigan are comfortable with playing 2 weeks in a row, or if they're comfortable moving their marquee game, which is right, the biggest game in the entire college football calendar, before you play the Rose Bowl or the national title. The biggest regular season game of all of them is always Ohio State, Michigan. It's the team, it's the game that they first bid on. That's the first pick of everybody. How you move that to October, I don't know, because what makes that game special is its presence 2 days after Thanksgiving at noon. If you move it to October, it just becomes Oklahoma, Texas. When you put it where you put it, it becomes tradition. And so I think they're going to have to figure that out. If they scrap the divisions, they will go to a pod model. Nebraska will play Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Iowa every year. Then they will either have six crossover games, or they play other teams in a rotation, or they'll play five crossover games with a 1 week championship week where they play the opposite team, or they get paired up with a team, or they'll simply play eight games and they'll go to four non-conference games, which would mean that the Pac-12 and ACC alliance is probably back on. I don't think that's going to happen. I think it's going to be nine conference games, one way or the other. We'll figure out how exactly those nine games look.
I think another point that we need to mention here is that these conference championship games are being considered for as the NCAA considers expanding the college football playoff. It's possible that these conference championship games become automatic bids into the college football playoff. And I think in that situation, it would make a lot more sense for the Big Ten to eliminate divisions, because right now the conference championship game is this sort of amorphous notch on your belt. Yes, it's part of your resume. Yes, it allegedly helps you, but we've seen instances where conference champions get left out because of, you know, here's the subjective, we just think this team's better than you. If it becomes...
Well, they get left out because there's only four teams.
Right, that's why, right. But if you grant it this power of you're automatically in, then yeah, I think you should eliminate the divisions, because, you know, a team like Penn State, who has the potential to win 10 games every year and be in that game, deserve a shot at it, even if Ohio State and Michigan are in a different tier.
That's fair. I think Penn State only would have played for the conference championship in a 1-2 scenario. I don't want to be wrong about this. Never.
Penn State, Michigan, whatever. You know, it's like, it shouldn't be.
I mean, the Penn State's been the biggest whiner about this. We need to be honest. James Franklin's been talking about this for years. But people need to remember, in 2017, when Penn State was really good, and they were, they lost by 1 point to Ohio State, 39-38. And then I think they lost by 3 to Michigan State. No, and then James Franklin was all over himself about how they got screwed. Let's be clear. They were 11-2. They lost 2 games in the Big Ten. And Ohio State and Wisconsin played each other for the Big Ten championship. And Penn State lost to Ohio State. And Wisconsin was undefeated. So Penn State, the only time that Penn State ever was going to advance was the time that they did, and they won the Big Ten championship, and the College Football Playoff Committee determined that Ohio State was a better football team than Penn State because Penn State beat Ohio State by blocking a field goal. That's why Penn State didn't go. Yeah.
Incidentally,
but Penn State's whined about this for a long time, and that's fine. They can whine about it. If they think they're going to somehow avoid playing Ohio State and Michigan in the course of the year, they're insane. They're not going to. They're going to have to keep doing it. And so you always look at, like, who, you know, cui bono, like who benefits, what would be the advantage of it? There for years, the ACC, there's been this, oh, Miami and Florida State are going to play each other. And oh my God, these divisions. No, they've never played each other in the ACC title game. And that's because neither team is that good or hasn't been good at the same time. So, like, some of the fears that come up are unfounded. However, Michigan, Ohio State, that's a reasonable fear. It's happened once again with Oklahoma and Texas. And it could happen with Ohio State and Michigan quite often. And they just have to, they're going to have to measure that. Jim, the point you make is really, really good. That if it's going to be an automatic bid, then by goodness, you probably ought to have. But you could also make the argument of the one thing you don't want to do is knock off your best team by having them play the second best team and lose out on the automatic bid. So I don't know how they want to go about this. I really don't know. But for Nebraska, ending divisions would basically mean they play those same three teams every year and they don't have to worry about winning the West, because that no longer matters. It just doesn't matter. Like, you don't have to worry about having a context where you win your division and your division plays sausage ball while Ohio State plays completely differently. At that point, you just worry about trying to win all the games on your schedule, knowing that some years you're going to face Maryland and Indiana and Penn State, and they're more spread. They're more spread teams. I think one of the challenges that Nebraska has is they got to play Iowa and Wisconsin and these sausage bowl teams every single year. And if they don't beat them, then they don't get to win the division. And they haven't beaten them very often in the last 5 years, any of them.
That would remain true even if they eliminated divisions, right?
They would, but the difference is, and I think this is a considerable difference, is that Wisconsin or Iowa would not be able to beat one team the second place team and then run away with it because they feast on Northwestern, Illinois, and whomever else. Like the crossover games play too big of a factor right now in who rises and who falls within the Big Ten West. Nebraska had to play Ohio State, Michigan, and Michigan State last year. If they had to play Rutgers, Maryland, and Indiana, they would have went to a bowl game. They would have been 6-6. I really believe that. And they might have been even better than that, because if they'd won some games, then maybe they would have gotten some confidence. But, you know, Nebraska played a beautiful football game against Ohio State and lost by 9. If they had played that same game against Indiana, they would have won by 35. It's the luck of the draw. And I think eliminating that would probably be good, you know, because Nebraska had got stuck in this weird cycle where they played Ohio State for 6 years in a row, and now they're supposed to play Michigan for 5 years in a row. And it's not really fair. And Iowa and Wisconsin don't have to do that. That's part of the issue.
You don't think that changes, though? I mean, like, if you go to no divisions, you're still going to have whoever's in your pod, and that's going to create scheduling inequities, even if it protects rivalries. And then it's still going to come down to, you know, who do you get in the, you wouldn't call them crossovers anymore, but who do you avoid in your schedule every year? And so it's still kind of the same thing, except it just removes that excitement for the middle tier. So I don't know, I suppose it benefits the top of the league and the middle guy. You know, where's the excitement by mid-October? Is it, I suppose it's just making a bowl game. It's still, you know, beating those rivals. If you're two games behind Ohio State before Halloween, like what's the point? Like, you know, you're out of it at that point.
I think you're right, Evan, but I don't think these decisions are made with the middleman involved mind.
Exactly.
The top of the league is what matters.
Yeah, I'm sure you're right. So speaking of trying to get to the top of the league, recruiting being the lifeblood for that, Nebraska's got another major visitor weekend. They've already hosted some portal transfers in recent weeks. This is more of a high school flavor, though there is a portal player coming in, and Marcus Washington as well. I guess, Sam, you've been immersed in this. Kind of lay out the weekend and kind of what's coming up here for Nebraska. What's at stake?
Let me finish this real quick. Okay. Let's talk real quick. Nebraska's got a good recruiting weekend coming up. We'll set the transfer over here to the side. We'll talk about him in a minute. The three players that Nebraska's got coming this weekend, I think Nebraska would take them all tomorrow. Caden Green is a top 100 offensive tackle from Kansas City, Lee Summit North, which is a suburb of Kansas City. Good player. Great offer list, you know, one of those guys that you love to get in your program. Evan, you know this, that Nebraska has actually had quite a bit of success recruiting highly rated offensive tackles over the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. You know, Corcoran and Prochaska, Ben Hart. I mean, those are all really good players.
Yeah.
And so this isn't that new for them, but you know, Caden Green would be probably the best guy that they've recruited, right up there with Corcoran. The two skill players are really interesting. Jaden Doss is a receiver from Raymar Peculiar High School down there in Kansas City, and a really good player, very similar to Jalen Noel, who went up to Iowa State last year, had a huge year as a true freshman up there, very similarly sized. Doss is a little bit bigger, maybe a little thicker, but does a lot of the same things, catches the football, can run, can return kicks. I think Nebraska's got him high on the list. Now, Mickey Joseph is the kind of guy who's going to get some guys that come in here who are really, really special blue chip receivers. I still think it's going to be a hard pull for an Omarion Miller, who's coming here in June, to necessarily grab a guy like that. Bonner was probably the best recruit they got in the last class. You know, Bonner's a guy they got late away from Georgia Tech. Some of the guys that Joseph's going after in this cycle have better offers than Georgia Tech. Let's put it that way. The other guy is Dylan Edwards, and he's the kind of guy that I like. I like smaller, shiftier backs who can catch the football, who can get lost in a pile and come out the other side. That's my kind of back. That's Amir Abdullah. Rex was bigger, but Rex was a little bit like that, shifty, hard to find. Corey Ross is a guy that, you know, a lot of people remember. Now, there's nothing wrong with the big, nimble Lawrence Phillips, obviously. You'll take that any day of the week if you can get that guy. In my experience, there aren't very many of those. There aren't many Amon Greens. There aren't many LPs. You know, the guys that Nebraska has done better with since those guys have been more of the shiftier, smaller backs. Anyway, Dylan Edwards is really, really good. He ran for 2,600 yards last year, amassed 3,200. He's an elite kick and punt returner, can catch the ball out of the backfield. He's Gatorade Player of the Year in Kansas. Goes to the same high school that current Husker Alex Kahn went to. There's another guy that Nebraska's recruiting down there by the name of Samuel Sane, who's an edge rusher, good player. And Bill Bush is the guy that's kind of been the point man on all this. We'll see how it turns out. But Dylan Edwards and Jaden Doss kind of want to play at the same school. And the advantage that Nebraska has is they're both coming up this weekend together. Edwards has been considered an Oklahoma lean, like a lot of elite players from the city of Wichita usually go to Oklahoma. Venables, who is an incredible recruiter in the state of Kansas, as good as anybody, will probably do a good job of recruiting Dylan Edwards. But Jaden Doss doesn't have an OU offer. And he has a Nebraska offer, and so does Edwards. So we'll see. Like, I think there's a real chance here that Nebraska's got. And I like the direction that Brian Applewhite is going in with running back recruiting. As you know, I was a big fan of watching A.J. Allen on tape. I think if you're going to run a spread offense, you need to have dynamic, shifty, a little bit smaller and a little bit quicker backs. You've got to have guys that can get out and make plays. And I feel like Nebraska's been a little heavy footed for the last several years since Mo left or was kicked off or whatever you want to call it. They haven't had that sort of electric back since then. They've leaned a lot on the Dedrick Mills. You know, Ramir is not quite like that. He's more straight line fast, not necessarily nimble. Sevion Morrison thought maybe, but didn't happen that way. And Jack Hillis Yant actually probably has the most agility, but of course he's 240 pounds. So I like the direction they're moving in with their backs. And I think AJ Allen's a good one, a good example. And then I think this kid is just as good. Yeah, you watch the 14-minute huddle video, and you think a little bit of an Amir Abdullah. It's natural to think of a Darren Sproles. He's got that ability. He's a good open field runner. And in a spread offense, what you want is the guy that knows how to find oxygen and just takes off once he hits it. So those are the three guys that are visiting. And then the transfer is Marcus Washington. Husker fans should be familiar with him. He was a high priority target for Nebraska under the Mike Riley era. Nebraska first worked him out at a Lindenwood camp back in June of 2017. I went down to that. He was there and he worked with Keith Williams. Then he came up for a Friday Night Lights. And then Nebraska obviously was fired. That staff was fired at the end of the season. He came, I think, for another subsequent visit under Frost, but he ultimately picked Texas. And now he's in the portal. I don't think he's as good of an addition as Trey Palmer, but I think he's got some ability. And Marcus is a long strider. He's 6'2", 190, long strides. He's a kind of a deep post guy. You know, you take him long, kind of like Betts would have been this year. So he's a long strider and. Not quick in a small space per se, but can take you over the top. I would say that I don't know who he's quicker than Omar Manning. He's not as big. He would be an interesting player on the outside. He wouldn't necessarily be the guy that caught 60 passes. That's gonna be Trey. But you know, he's a guy that can go over the top and make some things happen. He'd be a nice piece here at the end.
Let me ask you this, and for either of you guys, I'm curious, like, it's this weekend, but then we're into Friday Night Lights camps, and there's a lot of big recruiting pushes still to come. How do you think, I don't know, the weight or the importance of these events compares to even 2 years ago, when you're talking about guys who can transfer in and out, when you've got NIL as a factor? You know, the last 5-6 months have been laser focused on the portal more so than we have high school players. Like, maybe just put into context, like, how the importance or the weight of these particular weekends have changed in the climate of college football the last couple of years.
Well, if you want to be really good in college football, you better, these weekends better matter. You still need to do it through the draft, so to speak. And you certainly, you know, I've been an advocate of Nebraska taking 8 to 10 in the transfer portal. They're well north of 10. And I suspect long run, they'd like to bring that down under 10. You know, I think you want to use it as an accent, you want it to be sort of the salt. You don't necessarily want it to be the entire meal. You start getting into entire meals and you're running into a tough spot. You want to continue to develop. I think what Nebraska has learned, though, is that you can go get a receiver in the portal, and they're, if they get Washington, that'll be 3. You can probably go get a corner. You can probably go get a running back, although, you know, I think it's good to develop running backs young and just get some good ones. And there'll always be a quarterback. You know, I'm doing a Big Ten column on Illinois this week, and they got one from Syracuse named Tommy DeVito. And he wasn't bad. I mean, sometimes you need to go out and get a guy that can complete a freaking pass. And Illinois has had horrible quarterback play for years, unless they play Nebraska. And they got a kid that actually pretty good. So you can get those positions, but you better be able to develop your pass rushers and your defensive linemen and your offensive linemen and your linebackers. And I say that knowing, you know, that Devin Drew and O'Shawn Mathis are on the team, but they're only going to be there for 1 year. So you're going to get 1 year from those guys, and then you're going to have to go find some other people. So you better develop them. You better recruit them, because, you know, it's very, very hard to land one of these pass rushers or great offensive tackles for more than a year. Hunter Anthony and Kevin Williams are not what I would have described as priority scholarship guys. Nuri Nwili was not either. He walked on. To get one of these elite offensive tackles, you better have a good NIL package, or, you know, you better be a program that can offer, you know, quite a bit. So those are some thoughts that I have around that. Michigan, for example, needed a center. Well, they went and got the best center in the country at Virginia, but they're Michigan, and they went 12-2 last year. So Nebraska's not that. So you better develop those players.
Also, to Sam's point, I think Nebraska was in a unique situation this offseason where everyone kind of knows, like, it's nut up or shut up time, like today, yesterday. Everyone's job is on the line this season. So that, I think that played into the portal push and the guys that they needed to be guys who were ready made to contribute right now, because the wins need to come right now. But we've also talked about on the pod about how getting those guys, getting O'Shawn Mathis, getting Casey Thompson, took a lot of manpower, took a lot of resources, took a lot of time and investment. And I don't know that that's necessarily sustainable to be able to do that every offseason. And I think we would all agree that part of the reason that Nebraska was able to succeed in the portal this year was because of the new blood that had been injected into the program with, you know, Mickey Joseph, Mark Whipple, Bill Bush, these guys with long resumes and good recruiting track records, good development track records. That can change in an offseason. Like, you need guys who believe in you for the big picture of what you're teaching, not just because, oh, you got a shiny thing going on over here.
Good point, Jimmy. I think Nebraska believes it has its quarterback of the future. The present, I think, is Casey Thompson. I believe it believes that it has its quarterback of the future on the roster now in Chubba Purdy. But Chubba's got 4 years left. I think they believe very much in him. And certainly the current brain trust does. And I think they believe very much in Chubba Purdy going forward. And I think he's got an outside shot of winning the job this year, although I suspect that'll go to Casey Thompson. But, you know, the way they resolved that was to do it that way. And then again, you look at the guy that they recruited that's going to sign with them in 2023, Pop Watson. That's a completely different player and a completely different paradigm than the two previous guys they had recruited. And Watson was the MVP at the Rivals camp in Philadelphia. I just can't tell you that this kid's really good. Now, he isn't tall, but the things that he's able to do that you see on film are great. Like, there's just really good traits and training and placement of football and all the things that, you know, you should care about more than getting enamored by whether a guy can throw the ball 65 yards on the run. So I think Nebraska's making good changes in the way they look at some of these positions. And let's be clear, Mickey Joseph may add a third transfer wide receiver, but that guy intends to get as high a level receivers as he humanly can at Nebraska. And oh, by the way, you know, Malachi Coleman is somebody they want. He's going to be running the 100 here in about 2 hours over at the state track meet. Malachi Coleman is going to end up being a top 100 player. He is. And Nebraska will have a really good chance again.
I think the other thing that's worth mentioning with recruiting right now is that you're still recruiting 2023s and beyond in the context of this is a must-win season coming up, right? Like, it's obvious why Nebraska did what they did, going to the portal, trying to strengthen this team as much as they can, because you have to get to a bowl game and do the things that we've talked about. But, like, I think that's what's so fascinating about this weekend, about Friday Night Lights camps, is that, like, there's sort of an optimism to it, right? Like, you're investing in this under the assumption that you break out this year, that you get a sixth year as Scott Frost and the staff. And of course, if it doesn't work out, then things totally reset and change anyway. But I think that's sort of the other thing, is like, they've been so focused on next year. And so this is sort of that first tangible, you know, shift in focus to what's going on next.
Sorry to
bless you.
He's there. Sports ringing. I'm going to let it ring through. So
nice.
It's probably a guy. They're very faithful OWRH readers. We love them very much. And one of them usually calls for the Yankees score from last night, and who's pitching for the Yankees tonight.
I know they won last night. I don't know who's pitching tonight, though.
Usually it's the Yankees score, and more often it's who's pitching for the Yankees tonight.
Okay.
A lot of Yankees fans still out there. Great, obviously, with all duly noted. I'm thinking to myself, though, you know, Cubs fans, they already know the answer to that question.
As to whether they won or not? Yeah.
No, as to whether who's pitching tonight.
Oh, well, yeah, I suppose. We don't have Garrett Cole, but that's fine. Let's talk some hoops quick. Nebraska adds a scoring transfer, right? I guess that's how you'd characterize him, out of SMU. Jimmy, you mean that pronunciation?
It's Emmanuel Bandamel, and he is sort of a scoring transfer. I'll put it this way. I was expecting more of a scoring transfer. Watching Bandamel, looking at his shot distribution, he was, I would say, a third option at SMU. He described himself as like a spot up shooter who didn't do much else other than run around screens and shoot threes or space the floor and shoot threes. He shot 63% of his shots from 3-point range last season. He never in his college career has attempted more than 7 2-point field goals in a game. And the archetype of player that I was envisioning this last guy being was closer to a Baylor Shireman or an Antonio Reeves. Those are two different players, but that kind of archetype, a guy who's going to have the ball in his hands a lot, a guy who's going to create more for others. I talked to Bandamel two nights ago. He says he can do those things. It didn't reflect at SMU. They did have another talented guard who was averaging about 20 points a game. that's part of the reason. But it is curious to me that they took a guy without much experience at the Division I level, creating for others, creating his own shot, getting into the, what they need is someone who can break down a defense and get other people involved, create for others. He just hasn't done a ton of that. To me, his choosing Emmanuel Bandamel is a product of, one, they didn't get the guys they wanted initially. They didn't get Antonio Reeves, who they made their top priority. They didn't get Baylor Shireman, who I think, if they had known Baylor Shireman was available from the jump, would have been their top priority.
They knew that.
Yes.
I think they knew.
Well, whatever. Two guys who they really wanted, they didn't get. Second, it's a shift in philosophy. I think they want this to be a defense first team. They went out and gotten Juwan Gary, whose best trade is defense. They went out and got Emmanuel Bandamel, who can shoot, although he only shot 35.2% from three last year, which is pretty much average. He thinks of himself as a defense first guy. He loves defense. It's great. They need that. Obviously, they've been a terrible defense the past 3 years. You see Fred talking during the Adam Howard introductory presser about playing two big men. That's a defensive strategy, because it's really hard to create space on offense when you got two dudes mucking up the paint.
Who's the second? So is Walker
Blaze and Walker. He talked about playing Blaze and Walker at the same time, which is interesting to me. So I think that's a philosophical shift. I also think that this signals that they have strong belief in either Ramel Lloyd or Jamarcus Lawrence, two of the incoming freshmen. They believe that one or both of those guys can be impact players pretty soon, because I'm not saying that Emmanuel Bandamel can't do the things that they wanted Antonio Reeves and or Baylor Shireman to do, and they do already have Sam Griesel, who I think can shoulder some of that playmaking responsibility. But I don't think Emmanuel Bandamel can do it at the same level that they would have envisioned Baylor Shireman and Antonio Reeves doing it in this offense. So I continue to be fascinated. I said this on the radio last week. I'm fascinated to see what their offense is going to look like next year. I continue to be fascinated by that. And I wasn't expecting this kind of player to be the guy that they brought in.
It's a Tim Miles roster with better post players, actually. I don't think Tim Miles ever had two posts at the same time, like Derek Walker and Blaze Keaton. I don't think he did. Sort of, I guess, when he had Jordy Shimanga and he had Copeland. Copeland's a much better player than – well, that's rude. Copeland's a better player than Derek Walker, in my opinion. Better offensive player. But, you know, so he briefly had that, but I don't think – I think Blaze Keat is going to be a better basketball player than Shimanga was at Nebraska. But they're, you know, this is like a Tim Miles roster. This is that's kind of what it is.
With, got better recruiting pedigree.
Yeah, like in the
If we're counting stars, that's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I think that's fair. That's fair. Yeah. So you got how do you say it? Bandamel or
Bandamel? Bandamel. Yeah. Bandamel.
So right now, if you had to put a five on the floor, and let's just say they're not playing Purdue, so we don't have the two posts on the floor.
Yeah.
Who are the five? When they play Creighton. When they play Creighton. Who's the best team they're going to play next year? When they play Creighton.
I think you'll see the three grad transfers. You'll see Sam Griesel. You'll see Bandamel. You'll see Juwan Gary. You'll see Derek Walker. And I put CJ Wilshire in that other spot.
Okay. And Juwan Gary is the small four who's a pain in the butt because he's aggressive and a good defender.
Correct.
Are they done adding or what's next?
They're at 15 scholarships right now. I don't think that Latman or Trey McGowan's will come back. If one of them would, it would be Trey. Trey, I just don't know what's going on with Trey right now. He is in the background of a lot of these Instagram videos that Bryce McGowan's is posting at the combine. Like, Trey is dunking while in between Bryce shooting around or something. He's not invited to the combine. He's not invited to the G League combine, but he's there. He's in Chicago. I don't know what his situation is. I think that again, based on the vision that I'm seeing them moving toward right now, I think Trey would be a good fit for a defense first kind of roster. In the matchup zone, you want guys who are long and rangy and can play gaps. Like Trey is fantastic at defending his zone and defending an area. He's great on the ball too, but he's great at defending an area. But that would mean at this point shedding a scholarship player, and the waiver process has been, I would say, not very stringent this offseason. And I think particularly so if we've had a case where a guy was kind of shed to make room, but it's still kind of unfair to the kid because a lot of rosters are close to set in stone at this point. So yeah, I think they're kind of done. I think this is what we're looking at here.
Did they feel like they accomplished? I mean, I know you said they missed on some of their higher priority guys, but did they accomplish close to what they were hoping to? Like, is this going to be a markedly different team, or is this more of the same?
It will be different. The defense should be improved. Did they increase their win total significantly? I don't know the answer to that question, because again, I don't know how the offense is going to function. I think this is sort of a heat check on Fred's part, his belief in the power of his marker on the whiteboard. I think he believes that he can make it work with a bunch of pieces on offense, which I kind of think is what they have. I don't know if they have outstanding offensive talent in terms of shot creation, but I think Fred thinks he can manufacture a lot of that. And you go back to what Trev Alberts has been saying about Fred doing things differently and being uncomfortable. They certainly accomplished that. The idea that, and I don't know how realistic it is that they'll actually end up playing two big men at the same time, but the idea that you would float that is jarringly different from what they've done in the past. The idea that you would grab a guy in Juwan Gary, who is 10 for 50 career on three-pointers, that's very different from what they have done in the past. They've always prioritized shooting. And the idea that they are, besides Sam Griesel, there's not a clear-cut guy that you just give the ball to and say create stuff, I think that's different too. So if I'm reading between the leaves here, I would say that we're going to be looking at a more structured offense, more, you know, running a set play instead of read and react. And they're going to rely a lot on defense to create offensive opportunities for them, which is, I think, a good idea philosophically. I think talent wise, the Big Ten is far ahead right now.
Really?
I do.
Okay.
Interesting.
Why?
What I said at the beginning of the offseason was they needed juice. They needed, you know, not Alonzo Verge, but a guy who can do those kinds of things. They needed to replace the kind of pressure that Verge and McGowan's put on the rim last year. Vandermeer just doesn't venture inside the three-point arc very often. Again, not saying he can't be that guy. Maybe there's a whole range of skill set that he hasn't shown yet. We haven't seen, but he hasn't shown it yet. So I can only operate off of what the numbers tell me and what I've seen. So I think that, I don't know, you just watch these, and Nebraska has a top 30 recruiting class. I think it's 30 on the dot, but it's top 30. But the teams, like even the team, like Minnesota's recruiting class is ranked ahead of theirs. Penn State's recruiting class is ranked ahead of theirs.
Right.
They're already significantly far behind a lot of the teams towards the top of the conference. It's a steep climb ahead.
Oh, I think it'll be a pretty smart team.
It's experienced for sure. That would be helpful. That would be an improvement.
I think it'll be a pretty, I don't know. I think it'll be smart.
You're not going to be throwing up shots against Iowa in the first 5 seconds of the shot clock, that sort of thing.
I don't think so. No. I think they'll probably play more defense and they'll probably slow down a little bit. Try to get some three-pointers that aren't, again, I want to say this the right way. Bryce McGowan was a tremendous basketball player, is a tremendous basketball player. It was almost like many times in many games, well, it's time for Bryce to take a shot. I just, this is part of it. Like, and sometimes he made the shots. I mean, to be clear, I'm not saying that there was like a replacement that you could have put in there that would have been better. I'm not saying that if, for example, you put Bryce at Creighton and you put Arthur Kaluma on Nebraska's team, that they would have been, Nebraska would have been better. I'm just saying that, like, you know, it was oftentimes, well, give him the ball and see what he can do when he got the ball. And then other times it was, well, Alonzo Verge is going to take the shot. Like, it was like handing off to a running back. Like, it didn't fit my idea of what you would call. There are some players obviously on the planet who can do those things and do them to such a high level that you're very comfortable with them doing that all the time. I'm just saying, you know, that Bryce was hot and cold. Like, he'd have great games. He'd have great moments. He'd have these beautiful, you know, shots off the bat, off the backboard into the rim, you know, 15 footers. And he'd also take 28 foot threes. Not within any framework of anything. It was just, well, it's just time for him to take a shot. So I don't know. It's just a tricky situation because it's like, there was literally part of the story of that team is, you know, like, I don't know how else to put it. On a better team, he wouldn't have done what he did. He wouldn't have scored 18 points a game or whatever it was. You know, he would have been part of the offense, and his shots would have come within the flow of the offense. It wouldn't have just been, give him the ball, see what he does. Like, there was too much of that going on. That's what I would say.
I think this team is more likely to run within the flow of an offense. I think they are less likely to be able to succeed without the flow of an offense, and the flow of an offense can only take you so far.
Nebraska's had two players in the last 6 years that were just really gifted at getting to the rim, drawing fouls. That was Bryce and Palmer, and they were both good at that. Palmer had better players around. And I don't know the talent and the recruiting numbers and all that, but Palmer had, you know, Copeland and Watson and Isaiah Roby, who was enormously talented. And I just don't think Bryce had that. He didn't have that. He didn't have that good of players. I mean, Watson was a true point guard and Verge kind of wasn't. So, right. And he had a lot of assists, but it was, you know, I think we know what I mean here.
Sure.
How's the baseball team doing? They're ready to end that run?
Well, maybe. Three more games for sure. To Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Today is Thursday. So, they, you know, if they lose tonight and Purdue wins, then they're officially out. But if they find a way to sweep Michigan State, which isn't very good, then some of the other series actually set up pretty favorably for them. Maryland could easily sweep Purdue, which is in the eighth spot right now. Nebraska is tied for ninth, but if they match Northwestern, which is tied with them, they have the tiebreaker, does Nebraska. So, you know, I'd put it at maybe a 15 to 20% chance that Nebraska finds a way to get everything to fall just right and to get them to Omaha. You know, if they don't win the series, this would be the first time that they haven't had a winning season at Haymarket Park, which is kind of interesting. But you know, it's been a long year. I would not blame anybody if they wanted to sort of turn the page to what's next. I mean, we've talked about roster management for football, but the same thing is true for baseball, where you're still dealing with a lot of COVID extra year sort of situations. Do guys get drafted? Do they move on? You've got 17 players coming in next year, 9 of them junior college. So there's a lot for Nebraska to get to, whether their season ends Saturday or whether it ends, you know, a week from now in Omaha. It's going to be a busy offseason, but, you know, for at least another few days, they have something to play for. It should be interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, I do think – the wall to, I mean, you've done a great job with wall to wall coverage of the season. This is, you know, you do get to the end of it and it's like, if they make the Big Ten tournament, it's kind of like that actor who gets two more like roles after, you know, the role where they started to decline as an actor. And, you know, you dutifully review their work, but kind of know they're not going to win an award. Like it's, I'm trying to think about how we think about these things. And, you know, Nebraska baseball team is eighth in the Big Ten.
They want to be eighth.
They want to be. They're battling for eighth. I think the reason we care is because the Big Ten tournament is in Omaha. Like, outside of that,
I think that's fair. I'm excited.
They're a bad team. Like, what, you know, they're bad. And yeah. You know why they're bad, and you're going to write more about that.
I am. I'm anxious to lay that out. I'm anxious to lay it out because it's easy to say that it's pitching injuries, but it's actually, that's the least of their worries this year. And there's a lot of pretty compelling evidence to lay that out that I'll have this weekend, most likely. But it's just been, it's going to be a much different team next year. Similar to what we're talking about with basketball. A lot of indications are, I mean, it's going to be a totally new look group. So I don't, this isn't something they expect or want to happen again. It's been a long year. And I think they know it. They know what their deficiencies are and they feel like they're addressing them. So, but you're right. Like if the Big Ten tournament was in Minnesota, then you kind of are just like, okay, you know, you don't have the Omaha Mavs Twitter baseball account saying we finished 500 in the Big Ten. Can we go to the league tournament? Like you don't get those kind of shots. That's not good for anybody, especially in the same university system.
Well, you know who runs the social media accounts. That's part of the deal.
Sure. And it was deleted, but you know, those
sentiments. It was? That's good.
It was deleted. But
that's deleted tweets are hilarious to me. Like unless you really pulled something stupid and like, you know, said a word you shouldn't have said. What's the point? Like, I think there's almost a lack of accountability.
People tweeting them out are just they're really not. I mean, you know why?
I don't. I think it's a lack of accountability thing. Just leave it up there. Sure. You did a bad. Let the people see you did a bad.
I don't think that. So just so we're clear, do you think they asked Adrian Dowell before they tweeted that out? I don't think they probably did.
No, of course not.
Okay, so. Under those circumstances, if you're talking about just an individual person, sure. But you know, an institutional Twitter account, if the CEO of that institution, which in this case is UNO's athletic department, which in this case is Adrian Dowell, wants to recall the product, you recall.
Oh well, sure, yes, yeah, that's different.
Illinois pulled one of those in 2020 when they thought it'd be fun, right after the game. To like within seconds after the game, they tweeted, you know, thanks Nebraska for bringing back football.
Yep.
And I got roasted for tweeting. I wonder if Josh Whitman and Lovie Smith, whether they approved of that tweet. And I got roasted because that's how Twitter is. And you know, what are you doing? And how can you say that? And you're being a tattletale. No. I just guarantee you the AD and the football coach who don't have any idea what's going on that Twitter account are running that.
Right.
They don't want that out there. And I think sometimes the people who run the Twitter accounts, they want to have fun and they might be student workers. They might be, you know, on the social media team. They have no authorization whatsoever to talk trash to anybody. So like, why they do that, I don't know, because they're feeling hot-blooded in the moment. Because
they see other people do it, that's why.
Sure, yeah.
Yep, you exactly. Win a big one, you get puffed up.
Yeah, so I mean, I actually didn't mind UNO's tweet. I thought it was kind of funny, and I don't know that they were necessarily knocking big Nebraska. they were just proud of doing well in the Big Ten. They didn't beat very good teams with the exception of Rutgers, but, you know, good for them. That's good. And those are all fun things. Like, UNO's had a pretty good athletic year if they're able to make the NCAA tournament. They should be proud of what they've done. And real, so, you know.
Real yeah. quick before we go, Sam Cook just retired.
Who?
Punter, Sam Cook.
Oh, yeah, that was coming. They signed a punter, so.
Heck of a career.
It was an incredible career for him. You know, he's one of the greats, and yeah, that's good for him. And
future role at Nebraska, he talks to Bush a lot.
Maybe. You never know. I mean, he could become a special teams consultant or something. Pretty soon, they're gonna remove those coaching limits, and they're gonna have all kinds of guys down. Mm-hmm. You won't be able to stop all the coaches that they'll have at every school. Like, I'm gonna hire 27 guys.
Do you think we still get all the assistants during the week for availability? It's just more podiums?
I don't think so.
If there's 25 assistants,
yeah. The punting coach.
We'll probably get a rotation of them, and we'll probably get, you know, like the, you know, the assistant.
Mm-hmm.
Punt return coach,
the assistant to the O-line coach. Yeah.
Why did the ball they're gonna fix their punt return issues. They got the guys now. They got the, you know, what you ought to do is, who's Nebraska's center fielder in baseball?
Cam Chick, usually.
Yeah, go over there and call Cam Chick. Go out there and field those punts, Cam. You need to have an outfielder's ability to track a ball in order to be.
He really played good. Football in high school. He could do it.
I think a little too much emphasis is put on the what you do after you catch the ball. Like, it is obviously very important, but punters are so good now that you actually have to be able to go catch the ball. And I'll just, that one at Michigan State, I'll just never forget it. It just went right over his head.
Santino Panico was ahead of his time.
He was.
Mr. Fair Catch. Nobody appreciated
him. Well, he went up and caught the ball. Good for him. You know,
that's right. Like,
that's right. Jimmy, at one time, Nebraska was like special teams you. There was nobody better at special teams than Nebraska for like decades. Decades.
Virginia Tech might argue that, but yeah.
Yeah, they would. But I don't even mean in like I don't mean in the Beamer era. I mean, 70s, like 80s, the 90s.
Yeah, sure.
The number of block punts, the number of return kicks for touchdowns, the quality of the kickers, the quality of the punters. It was nonstop. From Chris Brown all the way through Brett Maher. There's just virtually no gap in there where they didn't have an elite kicker. And they had several elite punters too. And then they had great returners. And I don't know. I've always thought that the turning point may have been in 2003 or 2002, the Independence Bowl, when they called a fake punt with Judd Davies to throw a pass. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And then Billy C tried that one in 2006 in the Sugar Bowl, and it didn't work then either.
No, Nebraska's history with fake plays on special teams in the last 20 years is abysmal.
It is. Or the one that Bo wanted to call, but it took so long to run in the 2010 Big 12 championship that Bob Stoops finally just called timeout because he figured out what they were going to do.
What was the one where it was like a fake field goal where they flipped it over his shoulder and ran it? It was the same one that he did at LSU.
08 Colorado.
Yeah.
And it was intercepted. By Colorado's, it was intercepted. Brutal. It was intercepted by Colorado's. I think Jimmy Smith, who was an NFL defensive back for years, he caught it and he ran it back for a touchdown. and Bo even said after the game, "I would have cost us the game." And, yeah, you would have.
All right. Well, all right. Let's go out on a special teams note here. Thanks for listening. Lots going on. There'll still be lots going on. We'll talk to you guys soon. Thanks.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.